Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Hey, I just got back from a mine tour. We were in Northern and Western Nevada. The main thing I can tell you, my main takeaway is it was very, very cold, single digits. And for someone who's lived in Florida for the past 7 years with a couple of forays up north during winter storms and such, this was genuinely cold. The places we were at in Nevada, it was such a study in contrast. I'm going to be doing a special webcast or YouTube video on our forays into mining country, but it was an amazing trip. The companies we were covering, clients Silver One, Resources, and U.S. Gold Corp. And boy, like, it was such an eye-opener. But right now, we are in the midst of fake good news, which is better than fake bad news, maybe? I don't know. Fake news is fake news, no matter how you slice it. Someone is always benefiting from it. There's always an agenda. Hey, what's your latest take on fake good news? Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, John Rubino is with us now. John has his take on it. In fact, he coined the term fake good news. And hey, what's so bad about feeling good, John? Fake good news is good for the masses, isn't it?
Hey, Kerry. Well, for a little while it is. But basically, where we are now is we've got these news stories that are kind of lined up that have to come out. In other words, the Fed has to announce that it's cutting interest rates. And Trump has to announce that he and China have worked out a trade deal. As we head into the election, these things have to be announced. And they're out there looming. And the financial markets like this kind of stuff. You know, they're programmed to, or conditioned to, respond well to big announcements that make it sound like we've got adult supervision in the financial markets and things are going to be okay from here on out. But this stuff really doesn't matter. You know, we've taken on so much debt that the idea that the Fed has cut interest rates three times and they think this is enough and the economy is going to grow going forward and they won't have to cut interest rates again, that's false. You know, we've got so much debt that there's no solution, or there is no solution at all, but there's no short-term solution for the Fed except to continue to cut interest rates. So what will happen is, and what has happened the last three times we've had interest rate cuts, is that you get a positive reaction in the market for a little while, and then things get hard again, and the markets start to tank. And even though the Fed said it was going to pause, it is forced then to cut interest rates again. And we're on that cycle that we can't get out of. So we're going to have to continue to cut interest rates until we're deeply into negative territory as the business cycle turns over, which it has to do pretty soon because we're going on 11 years now into an expansion. And the average length of time that an expansion usually lasts is about 6 years. So we're running out of basically people to lend money to.
Yeah.
You know, when interest rates were on average, let's say 3%, the big banks and the hedge funds and the shadow lenders, they lent money to everybody who they thought it was reasonable to lend money to at that rate. And then interest rates got cut, and that that opened up a new set of borrowers who might be good credits at this new lower interest rate, and so on. But what happens is you lend all the money you can lend to the people who make sense at a given interest rate, and then there's nobody else to lend money to without doing some kind of deep subprime lending, which most big institutions are reluctant to do. And so lending starts to dry up. People aren't borrowing money and spending it anymore. The economy starts to slow down. And the Fed is forced to cut interest rates again to a new lower level that allows more lending to take place. Well, that's the treadmill we've been on for a really long time. And we're really kind of out of good credits to lend money to, right? You've got record levels of subprime car loans out there. You've got record levels of student loans out there, and students are just inherently bad people to lend money to. Yeah. You've got record levels of BBB rated corporate debt, which is one step above junk. In other words, they're not great credits, but we're lending huge amounts of money to them. So who's left after we max out all the lending that we can do to groups like that? Who do we lend money to? Well, the answer is that we cut interest rates dramatically, and that makes some borrowers who don't seem creditworthy now seem creditworthy because they have to pay less to discharge the loan. And so we can do it again. But those, by definition, those borrowers are subprime in today's world. So to give them a slightly lower interest rate and then call them creditworthy is kind of a false approach. It's not really true, but it seems that way when you run the numbers with lower interest rate temporarily. Mm-hmm. And there's a limit to how far we can go with this, but we don't know what that limit is. You know, if let's say you lend money to somebody for -3%, which that day is coming apparently in today's world. And then they go out and being the low class credit that they are, they spend it on frivolous stuff. Well, they still have to pay the principal back, or most of the principal back. So even though they've got a negative interest rate, they still have loan payments that they have to make. But since there was nothing productive that they could do to invest that money and generate positive cash flow, by definition, since they're junk credits, then they still can't make their payments. And that's the world we're creating now. All these people who have really good low interest rates, or maybe even in some cases negative interest rates, and still can't make their payments. When that realization dawns that that's where we are, and the only way to go forward is to go even deeper into that hole, then the system will break down. And we don't know when that's going to be, but the time is coming when that becomes the dominant theme in the financial markets, because there was a stat that just came out this week. I think it's 2/3 now of investment grade credit now has negative real yields. In other words, the yield is below the inflation rate or overtly negative. And that's amazing from an economic theory standpoint, to see a world like that. And it's not a world that's recovering. It's not a world that's, you know, trying to claw back to some kind of normality. It's a world that's moving headlong in the other direction. You know, we're lowering interest rates around the world, increasing the amount of negative rate debt with no end in sight. So yeah, the news that you hear now, like, oh, we settled the trade war with China, or oh, the Fed has cut interest rates and maybe it'll do QE pretty soon. Those are meaningless pieces of news, because none of that will fix the overriding problem of way, way, way too much debt and virtually nobody left who can borrow and then pay back their new debts.
Well, and that's a real dilemma. So the merry-go-round is going to stop at some point, and it's not just going to come to a gradual halt. It's going to be at max speed, and then all of a sudden the brakes are going to be hit. And what's going to happen to all those people riding on the horses there who 2 minutes ago thought that this ride would go on forever and it would keep being fun and nothing can go wrong?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy's led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to trilogymetals.com. That's trilogymetals.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And the future I just sketched out kind of assumes that we have stable politics while all this is going on. And that's not a given at all. You know, Germany, for instance, which is the rock solid country in Europe, which is mostly made up of countries that are absolutely not rock solid financially. Angela Merkel's party is now polling in third place in a lot of different parts of the country. And the far left and the far right parties are rising. To take the place of Angela Merkel's party, which means that you get political instability in Germany if either the far right or the far left actually takes power. That's a huge change in a country that everybody thought they could count on. In the U.S., you know, we're heading into an election cycle that is really hard to predict. Bernie Sanders is actually still doing well in the Democrat primaries, and I wouldn't say it's a probability that he's the nominee, but it's certainly a possibility. And that really should have been the election last time around, because he would have won the primary if they hadn't cheated him. And that would have been that election campaign would have been the perfect metaphor for where we are now. You know, Donald Trump versus Bernie Sanders, which is to say that all the old ideas are going to be thrown out the window. And we're going to come up with some new set of ideas to run the country, whatever they happen to be. You know, we just don't know what the ideas are going to be. And that kind of uncertainty is terrifying for financial markets because, for instance, if you're going to build a factory and it needs to generate positive cash flow for the next 30 years in order to make your decision today a good one, you want a sense of stability in your projections. You want to be able to say, all right, the world is kind of going to be like this 20 years from now, and the dollars that the factory generates will kind of be worth this, and demand will be that. You know, you need to be able to predict things, and we're moving into a stage of the process where it gets harder and harder to predict the political backdrop on which finance and capitalism in general happens. So That just adds to the complexity, and it adds to the pressure on the central banks of the world to lower interest rates, because lower rates are generally seen as a way to smooth out the stresses in the financial system. Because if you have access to extremely cheap capital, that covers a multitude of sins, you know, and the central banks will therefore be forced to be even more aggressively easy if politics gets crazy. And there's a pretty decent chance that politics does get crazier from here, because you've got civil unrest everywhere now. Latin America is just on fire. The Middle East is crazy. And Hong Kong isn't going away. Why isn't Hong Kong going away, Kerry? Yeah, what do they want? We don't even know what they want. And you've still got people in the streets. The latest story was that some Hong Kong politician got his ear bitten off in a riot somewhere there. And Chile, my God, Chile was the middle class. They were sort of the Germany of Latin America. It was the one place you could count on to be what it was going forward. And now they've got chaos there. And, you know, apparently at least we kind of understand what the reasoning there is, because corruption has been rising, and economic inequality has been getting more and more extreme. And so finally, the people have just kind of cracked and they're out in the streets. And And so all of this leads to political actions that involve higher spending, right? Because if you're going to have to placate the people who are in the streets, the only way to do it really is you can't just, you know, fire the prime minister or something like that, because the system doesn't change when you do that. If you replace him with somebody just like him, you need to raise government spending and move that money into the sectors that are most frustrated and that are causing the most trouble. And that requires the central bank to increase money creation and cut interest rates. So everywhere you look, you see pressure on interest rates and on government spending. So the virtually the only certainty that that you can point to in the upcoming few years is that government spending has to go up and interest rates have to go down. Mm-hmm. So in other words, more of the same, but at an accelerating rate. And after we've already hit levels of debt and interest rates, that don't offer a lot of theoretical room to maneuver. In other words, you can't push interest rates down below a certain point. We don't know what that point is yet, but there's a level at which we can't go below before the cure becomes worse than the disease. And with government spending and government programs that are designed to encourage the private sector to borrow a lot more money, there are limits to that too. You just, at a certain point, a government can't borrow any more money without it affecting the value of its currency. And private sector individuals can't borrow any more money without destroying their creditworthiness and or sending them into bankruptcy. So all of this stuff has limiting factors. You know, the math doesn't work at a certain point in all these trends. And the fact that we don't know the point at which it doesn't work anymore does not mean that point's not out there. And it doesn't mean we're not heading for it, because we are. It's out there and we are heading for it. We just don't know where it's going to end. And, you know, which takes us back to precious metals. Those are the things that that do best in situations like this. And the fact that central banks out there, China's always been buying huge amounts of gold. Now, Germany, just for the first time ever, or for the first time in a long time, the Germany's central bank is adding gold to its reserves. So we're seeing even the central banks, which have been big net sellers of gold for the past couple of decades, turn into net buyers in the aggregate. And that is a huge sea change. And that implies that the central banks see the stuff we're talking about with an insider's perspective and know that the risks are growing to the world's currencies. So anyhow, we shouldn't mistake the relative calm of today's markets for a new normal, because it's not. It's just a little placid period before the volatility comes back.
And when it comes back, it's going to come back with a vengeance, isn't it?
Based on the numbers, the higher debt levels go, the lower interest rates go, the greater the volatility that you would expect out there. So the next thing that happens will probably surprise on the upside in terms of volatility. And the phase change in market psychology could be commensurately quick and big. You know, we could shift over to pessimism and risk off very easily. You know, it won't take that much to scare people into selling their tech stocks and moving into treasury bonds again, which they already did in the previous year, and also moving into precious metals. So all of that ought to happen in the next few years. And it should, or at least probably, will happen in a way that surprises people with its severity.
Yeah. And well, we won't be surprised, will we, John?
No, you know, Carrie, you and I are going to be like, finally, it's about time this stuff started happening, because we've been saying this for a long time. And we've been right in theory, but wrong in financial markets practice. Stocks are at record levels today. And they really shouldn't be, except for the fact that we're inflating the hell out of financial assets by pushing interest rates down and by increasing money creation. So to the extent that there's an end to the process of excess money creation and falling interest rates, that means there's an end to the financial asset inflation out there somewhere. And when that happens, it's going to be pretty brutal, because there are air pockets under a lot of stock prices right now, you know, especially big tech, things where you don't actually have fundamentals supporting the stocks. All you've got is rapid growth in revenues. Mm-hmm. And when people get scared, they stop looking at revenue growth and they start looking at cash flow. And if you can't demonstrate dramatically increasing cash flow that more than covers all your obligations and makes your stock look cheap in relation to cash flow, then you have trouble justifying your stock price and your stock price goes down. Look at 2000, when the tech stock bubble burst, a lot of good quality companies went down by 80 or 90%. The same thing is possible with a lot of the tech sector right now and with the financial sector right now, because remember, banks and home builders and mortgage finance companies and investment companies in general depend on the value of the currency, because that's what they own. They own financial assets which pay dollars in some way, and they depend on the value of the dollar. So let there be a financial crisis in which we start to lose faith in the value of fiat currencies, and then finance companies turn out to be really bad investments. So it's all coming. I don't know when, but...
Bad investments, but then due to the Fed's bailout, $16 trillion or $17 trillion worth of money printed up out of thin air, all of a sudden they became great investments, except for some just haven't done some well. For instance, like a GE Capital, which was should have been called GE Negative Capital, because that's what they wound up with. Certain companies that weren't in the favored bailout line became very bad investments. So you have to wonder who is going to be cut from this line of preferential players when the next crisis hits, which we're pretty certain is going to.
A lot of this, if history is any guide, depends on the decisions of people who don't really understand their situation. You know, the big banks and the guys running the Fed and the guys running the Treasury Department actually understood the system that they were creating back in the 2000s, they wouldn't have let it get to the point that it got to. So by definition, they don't understand the world that they've created. And then the decisions they make to bail everybody out or to decide who to bail out are based on their lack of understanding, which means it's really hard to predict.
You know what it means, John? It means that the people, the companies that were the worst and the most mismanaged, AIG, JP Morgan Chase, I mean, go down the list, BOA, all of these companies, they're the ones who are probably going to get bailed out, because the bigger failure you are, the more of a bailout you're going to need. And they're not going to make the mistake of having a Lehman Brothers blow out on us. Whatever they have to do, they're going to do to stop it. Now, you and I haven't talked that much about the repo madness, what's happening, but that really is the first indication. When you go to a staid market like that, where everybody trusts everybody one day, and then the next minute, nobody trusts anybody. And then where are we?
Well, that's really one of the funny things about what happened during the Great Recession, is that the lesson that these guys seem to have drawn from it is that their big mistake was letting Lehman Brothers go bankrupt, not letting gigantic derivatives positions just explode across the big banks, and not letting house prices get way out of control and subprime lending become the driver of the economy. None of that was a problem. And everything would have been okay if they just had bailed out Lehman Brothers. and the fact that that's the case, that that's actually the mistake they think they made in all of that, implies that next time around, they'll make similar mistakes. And like you said, they'll probably just bail out everybody in sight. Anybody who seems even remotely systemically dangerous will get a lot of new money.
And, the Fed under Dodd-Frank is pretty much, they can just do it without getting any congressional approval now. I was listening to one person talking about what Dodd-Frank really did was mean that the Fed will never have to go back to Congress for a bailout of the financial sector, because under Dodd-Frank, any entity that they deem as a threat to the financial system, that they deem its failure as a threat to the financial system, they can just go bail out without any approvals or anything. So it's like, you know what it reminds me of, John? If you remember that movie Casino, at the end, the government is breathing down their necks and they start like killing off people who might be a threat to them. And then, you know, they're looking at this guy. Well, he's always been a loyal soldier. He would never turn us in. And then the big boss says, well, you know, you never know. And that's what they're going to be saying. Well, this bank, it's insignificant. It's a nothing bank. But if they fail, you never know. And that's what it's going to be. Just like Casino, they're just going to save everybody, because anybody's boat that sinks could bring all the other boats down.
Yeah. Yeah. But the question then becomes, what does that do to the value of the currency if a country is just bailing out everybody in sight and tossing trillions and trillions of dollars around? And there's a point at which you've shifted the risk from the entities in the financial system to the currency. In other words, the country itself becomes the thing that needs to be bailed out. And then who bails us out when the time comes? You know, if the Fed is seen as insolvent and the dollar is falling, and that means the Fed can't use dollars to manipulate the markets anymore.
Yeah, that is very true. Well, I guess we're going to be hearing a lot more about this in the coming weeks, John. So you need to keep listening to Financial Survival Network and go to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. John, as always, thank you. We appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you next week. Email kl@carrylutz.com. This is going to be really interesting because we don't know what's going to happen. Stay tuned. Make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. We're both following it closely. Email kl@carrylutz.com. John, we will catch you next week.
See you, Carrie.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.